Listeners, I'm afraid I must inform you of an extremely unfortunate event. Several of them, in fact. So many that we've decided to create a podcast to chronicle them all. But if you're interested in well-produced podcasts with celebrity guests, you would be better off listening to something else. There will be no famous people on this show, and only the cheapest editing software will be used. There won't even be a Squarespace ad. For those of you brave enough to stay, welcome to our perilous podcast discussing A Series of Unfortunate Events by Lemony Snicket.
Your electric glow is all I feel.
Welcome to Not So Young Adults, where two former teens try to recapture the glory days of their youth by discussing their favorite YA books to figure out what makes them so good. Why are they so good, these books? But today, it's not just us talking about books. We have two more, I assume, former teenagers joining us from the fabulous, and I mean capital F fabulous, Into the Fold podcast. We have the hosts, Juliana and Jeff. Welcome, you guys. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us. I mean, I can only speak from experience. Jeff, you're going to have to pipe in here too, but I too was a former teenager at one point. It's not a phase that everyone goes through, but luckily I too got to wear like spandex shorts and have glasses that made me look like Carl from Jimmy Neutron. So the privilege is all mine.
You know, you could have gone with angst, you could have gone with caffeine consumption, but no, your go-to example for teens was spandex shorts.
I caught that too.
Yeah, I mean, I was really in show choir.
Yeah, to be fair.
You know what, Juliana, you truly are a classic. Like the McRib sandwich.
One of a kind. It only comes back once a year and sometimes gives you heartburn.
Now, I was going to chime in first because I practiced something you guys because of what we're talking about today. All right, give me the line again, quickly, while it's still fresh in my mind.
We're joined by Jeff, who's been teasing something he's going to present to us for months now. I believe this is what we're getting right here. So if you want to lay it on us, Jeff.
Hello, hello, hello. I am your beloved Count Olaf.
That's wonderful.
That's scarily good. That's really good. That was super good.
That was actually pretty good.
I told you I was going to do
Jeff
that.
Has been teasing that Olaf impression for months now, and it really delivered. And we're having technical issues, so we could see Juliana, we can't see Jeff. So we're just hearing that from like a dark void, and for all we know, it could be Olaf. Yeah. Olaf could have just snuck right in.
Yes, as far as you know, I have makeup on my face, but not on my ankles so as to obscure the eye tattoo that is definitely for sure there. Because you can't see it. You can't tell me I don't have
it. We cannot prove Jeff wrong at this time.
Yeah, valid.
But in this universe that we're going to be talking about, do they really rely on proof? Is there proof?
Not in the legal system.
Proof of legal system,
quote unquote. Yeah, legal system. But I just want to thank you guys. I know you're both super busy. Jeff, I'm pretty sure you don't sleep.
I'm sorry. What, sleep?
Yeah.
Juliana, do you know this word?
I never heard of her.
Are you
don't
sure
know
you're
her.
Saying it Have right?
Maybe it's a Southern thing.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know what? I'm not that far south. I'm only in Kentucky, so maybe I have to go a bit further down
south
for that.
You gotta get 10-gallon hats out.
Right. You know what? I will go down south and I will try this sleep thing that you're talking about.
We'll have to go ask for
it. Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, there's these stores that you have to go get it from.
Oh, they sell them. Okay,
Mattress
great.
Mac
great,
is your
great,
guy.
Great, great.
Yeah. He's our local legend here.
Solid. Love it.
We did have a bit of a late start. We had some technical issues, so unfortunately I will have to cut my reading of the Toyla slash fiction that I wrote for you guys. But I did want to briefly talk about, I didn't actually write anything.
That was very mean. I was very excited for a second
I forgot
there.
Who I was talking to. Most people would be like, oh, weird joke.
No, Jeff and I were like just fully invested for a moment there. We were like, we really wanted that. Like, you serve us like an obscure, I would love an obscure fan fiction. I know Jeff would too. Like all the tropes, give it to us.
I keep telling him.
Guys, just look at the disappointment on my face.
Yeah.
gotcha.
I will say, ever since his Twilight fanfic that he wrote for one of our episodes, I keep telling him he should really try to make that happen.
Yeah.
Keep writing.
Yeah, yeah, I wrote a scene of Carlisle and Jacob.
Go on.
Well, they just have a lovely conversation. Whoa. And
then they kiss.
Almost.
And then they kiss.
That's for the sequel. I gotta build tension.
And then they kiss Spencer.
Kissed, and then they got married, and then they had babies somehow, and it was beautiful.
They did.
I mean, it's vampires. They can have babies however they want.
Not because convention dictates that they must. It's because that's what they wanted.
Carlisle loves kids. He wants to have a little furry.
Yeah,
wolf
they're very pretty
he
people.
He certainly does.
Or vampires.
He certainly does. He's got so many kids. He's practically, you know what? He's practically Mormon or a Catholic or just bad at contraception.
All of the above.
Yeah. Probably. Yes.
I don't know if we'd been to the Twilight Festival the last time we talked to you guys, but I ran into the actor who played Carlisle at an event.
Oh,
like,
really?
Weirdly, because they had and he was there like doing signings and stuff, but we didn't get tickets for that. Mm-hmm. So we missed that, but there was like a big gala, possibly a gala at the end. And he wasn't attending it, but I went to the bathroom in, like, the back of this little building, and I walk out of the bathroom right as he's coming in from, like, this weird side door. So, like, we, like, run into each other.
Oh, that's so odd.
Oh.
I didn't even have time to say anything where he, like, I think he saw the Twilight fans at this place. He's like, they're gonna mob
he's
me.
He's like, nope, not
yeah,
for
I can't
me
do it.
Today.
No, and then he said, excuse me, it's Dr. Mr. Carlisle. I didn't go to medical school for hundreds of years in secret to be called Mr. Carlisle, thank
well,
you.
Well, he's had to go to medical school, like, several times.
Oh, yeah. Keep up with the times,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like I said, hundreds of years.
I would hope he did.
Man, that's rough. Going back to school over and over again.
Okay, well, I love this conversation, but we're actually talking about a different franchise.
A different
here today.
Yes.
Yes. The one that you guys have been talking about for a while now.
Unfortunately, yes.
Why do I think Jeff has like a list of puns sitting in front of him that he's going to read off one-liners to us this entire time?
I believe it.
Yeah, I've got a list of puns in front of me. It's called My Brain.
I was going to say, I don't think Jeff needs a list. I think he's just got him ready to go.
I am the list. I don't get ready. I stay ready.
So we've been talking about a series of unfortunate events on our podcast, but today we're not talking about one of the books. We're going to be discussing the, I would say, acclaimed, lauded.
The Academy Award winning.
It is.
Yes.
It contains so many, like, big actors and actresses that I was like, why Madeline Streep is in this movie?
Wild.
Yeah,
great.
Not only is Madeline Streep in it, Meryl Streep is in it as well.
I didn't even catch that.
Is that a joke or is that real?
It is a joke.
Oh, okay. I just
Meryl
said
Meryl Streep is in the film and you said Madeline.
Oh, I thought I said Marilyn. Sorry.
Where did you get Madeline?
It came out, it was an accident. I didn't mean
Madeline
to say it.
Madeline is a beloved children's literature character from France.
That is a good
Yeah,
is.
She lost her appendix. I know her very well.
Meryl Streep is a wonderful actress of indeterminate nationality because of her gift for accents.
Who's the real Streep? Have we ever seen her?
I don't know. Maybe they should have a Streep fight.
Ha 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 ha.
Before we get into the movie, I wanted to ask you guys about the books. Like, did you read the series when you were kids?
Keep in mind, I've not read the last one.
Oh, okay. I can't even remember the ending.
Me neither.
Honestly.
Don't tell me the ending.
Yeah.
Can I answer you guys honestly? Yeah. I don't need to flatter you. We're already such great friends. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you the honest truth, and it's going to flatter you naturally. Mm. I started reading the series because of your show.
Oh, God.
Because I realized this entire series of books had come out and I had not actually read it. I'd seen most of the Netflix show. I'd seen this movie so many times. But I said, you know what? Last year, somebody told me read all the Percy Jackson books and I did. Now my friends have this great new podcast where they're reading through the series of unfortunate events and I need to read those. So I read through them all in a couple of weeks.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. And how'd you like them?
I love them. And you know, it's funny. I'm finding it's a good thing that some of these books and some of these series I'm reading as an adult who can actually have perspective on things, because I actually tried reading The Grim Grotto, which is a very late book in the series. I tried reading it without. Yes. I did the same thing with.
Yeah. Do you read any series where it's supposed to begin?
I am trying to tell you why. So go ahead and keep that expression on your face the whole time, because it definitely won't stick. I did that same thing that I did with Harry Potter. Yeah. I'd picked it up in the middle because I didn't want to go all the way back to the beginning because I was an impatient child. The Grim Grotto had just come out, and I knew that because every year the Scholastic Book Fair would be at school, and that's the book they were pushing that year. So I said, okay, I'll give it a try. Got a few chapters in, got to the part where the Queequeg gets eaten up by the submarine that looks like an octopus, and Carmelita is doing a horrible tap recital, and then that said, nope, I can't do any more of this without knowing what's going on.
I'm surprised you even got that far.
Didn't you start Shadow and Bone from Six of Crows as well?
Six of Crows, yeah.
That's fair.
I did, but that, in my defense, that one, I didn't know that there was a whole bunch of books before that one, and when you look at Leigh Bardugo's website, it even says on there somewhere, you can start here if you want, and it's okay, but you probably should start from the very, very beginning.
It's just, it seems to be a bit of a trend with you, Jeff.
Yeah, a reoccurring trend.
And it's funny how every time it happens, it's never for the same reason twice. There's always different reasons.
To be fair, whenever I first read the Percy Jackson series, I picked up Sea of Monsters first.
Oh, that's a wild place to start.
I got through the whole book without realizing that it was the second in the series.
Really?
Yeah, I have no idea why, but after I finished and I got to the page of like, check out these ones, and I was like, oh wait, there's one before this?
I mean, it's the second book in the series, so it's much closer to the beginning of the series than Grim Grotto is for Series of Unfortunate
Very
Events.
True.
And also in your defense, with the Percy Jackson books, at least for the first couple, it's very similar to the Harry Potter novels in that you kind of get a recap of everything that has happened up to this point, or you get enough references to it that you don't really get lost.
It always annoyed me as a kid, and a little bit now, but I always hated that. I was like, who's coming in the middle of the series?
Me too.
I'm like, I don't need a recap. Yeah. And if they're coming in the middle, let them be confused. But
Jeff
then now I know
are.
Jeff has been Jess or that market.
Mm-hmm. Me and Spencer are the only really sane people, arguably so, in this exact moment.
We're the ones who watch Netflix shows and don't hit the skip recap button when it says previously on Bridgerton or whatever you're watching on Netflix. I don't know.
Oh, I hate the recaps on like TV shows. Oh my God, drives me bananas. Yeah. Especially
I thought you were going to say, I hate Bridgerton. I was going to say, me too. It's over freaking rated.
I enjoyed it.
Didn't watch it. I'm not like really one for like a schmutty soap opera. So that's just really, I started watching it and I was like, these people are hot. And that's kind of where it stopped. And I was like, mm-hmm, cool.
Because that's all there
is. It's true.
I can look at still pictures of this.
It's true. But the
that
angst.
Is all there is. And that is not enough to hold my attention.
Fair enough. Mm.
Juliana, did you read the Series of Unfortunate Events?
I did. So I was someone who I actually read, I think, books 1 and 2 were the only ones that were out when I started reading them. I remember going to Barnes & Noble like the day of for these books to come out because I was like so, me and my little like narcissistic, sarcastic, slightly devilish brain was like so into these books. I was like all for it. I read all the books before this movie came out. I saw this movie in theaters the weekend it came out. Thank you very much. I was so confused by the beginning. I was like, what the hell is this? What is going on? They stole my movie from me. Are we in the wrong theater? And then I realized what was happening. But I was the person too who I was like, I was in the theater as a kid, like being like, they messed this up, they messed that up, they left that out, they messed up, they better put this in the next movie, which they never ended up making. And I was so in on these like hard freaking core. These were like books that I really loved.
Yeah.
And I was like literally like going to the Barnes & Noble, picking it up the day that it came out.
This is a tough watch for someone who's a big stickler on them changing from the book, because this is a way, they go all over
like,
the place.
Yeah, pretty wacky.
Yeah, they took a lot of liberties.
Yeah, it felt like they just kind of read through the books and then said, okay, now let's see how much we can remember. They did not like reference the books as they were making it.
Well, and they stuffed 3 books into 1 movie essentially too, so...
Yeah, and that in itself was weird.
Yeah, so they made the choice to do first 3 books, Bad Beginning, Reptile Room, Wide Window, into 1 movie.
They also changed the order up a bit. So they split the first book, The Bad Beginning, in half and did the first half at the beginning and the second half at the end. Mm-hmm.
That was one change they made if they were going to put these 3 in 1 film that made sense to
me. I agree.
Because if you're gonna, it was the, of all 3 books, it's interesting that the first one has the most interesting conclusion. I mean, thinking cinematically about books, which is something I can't help but do now with all the podcasting and all the books I read and all the movies that I watch, like I think about these things now, that's the scene that you're going to look at in the book and out of all the books you're reading, you're going to say, okay, a big wedding where they are forcing a teenager to marry a grown man and then it gets foiled. They're going to definitely change that. But then there's that moment that we all know, if you've read the books, is very different, where the twist at the end of the book is supposed to be, oh, she signed it with her left hand.
Right.
But that's not something that's going to play out on screen very well. But you know what plays out great on screen? A child climbing the side of a building, fighting a man with hooks for hands, and then using the power of fire to destroy a legal document. That's an action-y type.
Anyway. Yeah, I actually like that.
If I'm remembering correctly, Spencer, and you can quote me otherwise, impossible, Jeff, they like tie the beginning of the end of the beginning of the first book into the ending of the entire series. If I'm remembering correctly, there's something I can't remember exactly what it was, 'cause I haven't read these books in such a long time. There's something in the last book that like reflects the first book really strongly. And I can't remember exactly what it is, but I remember being like, oh my God, when I read the book.
I have the vaguest memory of the last one.
I don't know if we can.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I'd have to read it, honestly.
Jess hasn't read it yet, I don't think. I think I know what it is, but I can't say until Jess has read it.
That. Okay, yeah.
I have like one memory from the last book that stuck with me that I think is what you're referencing.
Yeah, it's like a big like, like gasp moment that for the people who have been reading since the beginning.
Snicket is great at that, and he loves doing that. He really is great at mirroring and parallels of stories and events throughout the story.
That's true.
It's so good.
He's such a good writer. So that's the thing with the books, that rereading them now, because I loved them as a kid, like you, Juliana, but reread them as an adult with someone who at least knows a lot of words that sound fancy, like analyzing books. These books are so well written.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is like an orchestra he's created with every single tiny instrument in it. It's finely tuned.
It's the perfect way to describe it, because he's like this conductor and he's in. He's
You can feel the rhythm of him like giving the 1-2 count throughout the entirety of the whole series. And it's just like.
And I'm obsessed with the author being the narrator, but also being a character. I talk about it every episode. Yeah. I'm obsessed with it. It's such a great way to frame a story.
I'm getting goosebumps about reading these books for the first time, because I like genuinely, again, like I really love these
They're
books
so good.
And like they are so good, and I was literally at Barnes & Noble being like, give me the book, bitches, give me the book,
exactly.
Or I'll burn this place down.
I'm a part of down.
I will tie back to what Jeff was saying earlier with the left hand thing and how it's not really great for film, but they do tie that into the movie.
Well, they give it a shout out.
Yeah, because she starts to do it with her left hand and he says the right hand.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, a brief moment of accidental sense for the screenwriters where they said, you know what, people who love these books are going to notice this and they're going to get mad, so we better
we got to say something. Yeah, for sure.
That's the kind of logic that plays out in the books. Oh, a document isn't legally binding if you sign it with the incorrect hand. That, to me, is a perfect example of the kind of logic that the adults in A Series of Unfortunate Events use to inform all of their decisions about everything. Mm-hmm. That's how their brains work. And honestly, that kind of thinking, like that kind of behavior from adults, is really only going to play out so well on either a big or a small screen. So you really, you're not going to get the really true spirit of the Series of Unfortunate Events unless you read the books, because that's Lemony Snicket's style. Yeah. It plays out better if he can use as many words as he wants to, and he can describe things, because that's just it. It's not
words.
Just the dialogue of the characters. It's the way Lemony Snicket describes things, because even just to bring it back to the film, the narration throughout the film, it didn't feel very Lemony Snicket-y. And I'm sorry, but you know what? Jude Law is too hot to be Lemony Snicket. His voice.
Oh, is that who that was? I didn't even realize that.
This is a star-studded
Jude Law is too hot, and Patrick Warburton is just odd, but not in a Lemony Snicket kind of way. He's just odd in terms of how his voice sounds. By all accounts, he's a pretty regular guy. It's just that he talks like that.
So I don't know. I know, Jeff, you watched the show. I don't know if you have, Juliana.
No, I haven't seen the show.
Kronk. From Emperor's New Groove.
Kronk.
He does Lemony Snicket in it.
Oh, okay. Now that's a choice that I think I could probably get behind, honestly.
You should. Oh, nice. It is fantastic. It is perfect. And
That is such an under. Just shout out to Emperor's New Groove. What an underrated.
Oh, right.
Shout out to Ease My Croc. All the time.
I'm sorry, but anything that gets memed that much can't be deemed underrated.
I think no one watches it though. It's not like a Disney property that they like actually like.
If no
utilize.
One watches it, then how come everybody knows all the lines and quotes them at each
know,
other?
It's just part of the.
Well, it's that weird ground where it's like critically panned. It did terrible at the box office, I think, or it was like critically panned. But like our generation, we're like, oh, we all just know that. Kind of like everyone knows SpongeBob quotes. Like we all know all the SpongeBob quotes.
Right. Yeah. Even if you've never watched SpongeBob, you know SpongeBob quotes. I feel like that's where Emperor's New Groove is. Like, even if you've never seen it, you know some of the quotes. And like, oh my god, the squirrel and Kronk are like iconic.
Yes.
But
Nut Scouts.
Yeah. That's right. Kind of like the Snow Scouts that we get in Book 10. I couldn't help but comparing the show and the movie the whole time I was watching it, specifically the actors. The show, easy win with Warburton. But I think the movie... easy win for Olaf, Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey is so superior good. Olaf.
Yeah, I feel like this is, and Jim Carrey is, he's one of those actors who he doesn't play a character. He's play, it's Jim Carrey's version of Olaf, not Olaf by Jim Carrey.
Yeah, especially Stefano.
Oh,
he's
Stefano's
completely
so
different character.
Good. Oh, I love him, Stefano.
With Neil Patrick Harris on the show, what you get is a very talented actor playing the character.
Right.
What you get with Jim Carrey, like you get in so many other things, is that it feels more like the character is playing him, because Jim Carrey, you put him in makeup, you put him in costume, he'll get the basic rhythms of the character because he can fit himself into the environment of the story. Mm-hmm. But he's just going to do Jim Carrey stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there are clearly moments where he's not on the script. It's just the actors are having to play off of him. And it's tricky when you're doing that with a cast of adults. It's so much easier because they're experienced. They're trained a lot of the time. They know how to play off of you. But trying to get kids to keep up with that, that's pretty tricky.
There's literally scenes that are clearly, they just like, all right, Carrey, just do some
riff.
Bits.
Yeah.
He's like, I got this electric chair bit where I'm pretending to be like, is nothing to do with the story. Is
I think you might have to turn it.
Yeah, but it's hilarious. You don't even. I don't care. Like, I don't mind at all. Just let him do it.
Yeah, there were definitely moments where I was like, this is. I was like, Jim Carrey is here, friends. Like, this is just like literally, we were just watching like an improv show via Jim Carrey.
Exactly.
That's it.
And I read on IMDb, I was looking up facts about the show, and the Stefano character, which I kind of suspected, it wasn't working when they're filming it the way I think it's portrayed in the book. So he like went with this makeup artist into the trailer, and they just kind of came up with this weird look, and he came up with this character that is not at all like Stefano in the book, but it's also perfect.
No.
And we were cackling watching it. It was so funny.
I hated that accent until I realized something. And thank God Jennifer Coolidge is one of the hench people.
Bless her.
In this movie.
That was a jump scare.
I know. That's what this whole movie is. This whole movie is either people we didn't know were going to become iconic, like Jennifer Coolidge.
Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch is the friggin' realtor.
Yeah, she's a real. She's in there for like 3 seconds.
We all screamed at that.
It's like, that's friggin' Jane Lynch.
Yeah.
But, see, with the Stefano voice, I realized since Jennifer Coolidge is in this movie now too, and I know her voice, when I realized Stefano kind of sounds like he's trying to do a Jennifer Coolidge impression.
Oh
just maybe.
Think about it. My name is Stefano. I am an Italian man, and it makes me want a hot dog real bad.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I wonder.
Like, you hear it.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially
I
if, like,
now.
He came up with it on set.
Yeah, and he had heard other people talking, obviously.
Yeah, he's rehearsing a scene with Jennifer, like the cutout scene where he's trying to decide who's going to play the desperate milkmaid, and one says, I'm more desperate, but I'm milkier. And he's like, say that again. I'm more milky.
There's something there.
I could work with that voice. Darn neurotoxins. Yeah, that works. I can do that.
Yeah.
While we're on it, I made a list of all the celebrities that are in this movie. It's wild.
Yeah.
Yes, because I know I miss people, so lay it on us.
Jim Carrey, Meryl Streep are in it. Mm-hmm. Like you guys said, Jane Lynch is in for like 5 seconds. It's wild. It's,
yeah,
it's startling.
5 seconds.
Craig Ferguson, I don't know if you guys know. He's
the man of indeterminate
gender.
or person.
Yeah.
He had a late night talk show.
The way they played that up was interesting.
Very different from
so
the
too.
Hench person. Because the point of the character is that you look at them and they're so Well, I mean, in the book, it has a lot to do with their weight, which admittedly is probably not the best direction to go in these days. But the point of the hench person is that they're so androgynous, you literally cannot tell. Craig Ferguson looked like, you know, it's dangerous to say things like that these days. He looked like Craig Ferguson in a dress and makeup. I won't say it looked like a man wearing makeup because you can't tell things like that these days. But it just, because I recognize Craig Ferguson so much, I said, that doesn't look like a person of indeterminate gender.
He's also like split in half.
Yeah, which... it's weird. It's
kind
of confused.
Yeah, that's a weird choice.
That was a very literal interpretation during the wedding.
Yeah.
Like, that was a thing you would do then. I don't see them trying to get away with that now.
Because they go a completely different way with the show. But it's also completely different with the book. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it's weird. Uh-huh. But anyway, Craig Ferguson, he looks like a dad, you know. He's not, like, the person I would pick for, like, an androgynous role. But anyways, he's in it. We also get Luis Guzman, who's, I think, just the bald-headed henchman.
Yeah,
but I love Luis Guzman and anything he's in.
I guess he's the stand-in for the hench person with the, what is it, the something on the edge of his
he's
nose?
He's just got a long nose and he's bald.
Oh, yeah, or, yeah,
yeah.
That could be it.
Then we have Catherine O'Hara from Schitt's Creek.
We also screamed whenever we saw
this.
As Justice
also
Strauss.
Also Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas. That's what my wife said when we were watching it. She said, is that Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas?
That...
I said, why, yes, it is.
I never
Did
knew
that.
Know that. We're all learning.
That's one of her most. Yeah, that's one of her most iconic characters. It was, like I said, very early on in her career. Had no idea she was going to be iconic.
But then we also get Timothy Small, Peter Pettigrew from the Harry Potter series.
Spall.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, that's where I recognized him from. I was like, this guy looks like he looks very, because I was watching on my phone because I was like getting ready stuff.
You know what?
And I was like, that guy's face looks really familiar. I don't know why.
One of my favorite runners on your show here is how much you loathe Mr. Poe, because
I loathe him as well, and how you call him
Mr. Povid. My favorite podcast joke.
Thank you.
By far.
That means a lot. Jeff, from someone who also loves puns, I was incredibly proud when I came up with that.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely Mr. Povid. It's all about using that name for him. Timothy Spall made it difficult for me to dislike Mr. Poe. I mean, yes, he still seems like an irresponsible and not the most common sense adult like they all do, but just I don't hate Mr. Poe just because I enjoy Timothy Spall so much as an actor.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't say he's miscast because he didn't play the part well. He did. Mm-hmm. He's miscast because of everything I know about the real character of Mr. Poe.
Yeah.
He speaks far too eloquently to be Mr.
Yes,
Poe.
Because the show, Mr. Poe in the show is infuriating. He's so annoying. I hate listening to him talk.
He really, he...
In
yes,
the best way for
exactly.
the actor. Like, he's doing a great job because I can't stand
him. No, he played the part perfectly.
Then we also have, like we mentioned, Jude Law as Snicket, and I assume the one, because we see Snicket in, like, Shadows, I assume that's also Jude Law, who's now Dumbledore.
Yeah. I assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Dustin Hoffman makes a weird cameo out of nowhere. He's a critic at the theater.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not a character in the show or the books. And I'm not sure why he's there.
I thought I figured out why. I thought I figured out why. I was incorrect, because apparently a lot of people have also noticed that the two young ladies who were babies at the time who played Sunny in the movie, apparently their names were also Hoffman. Like, that's their last name. So people were thinking, that must be Dustin Hoffman's kids, and that's why he did that. No.
Even weirder then.
Yeah,
he must have known the director or something. I don't know. But then also, we mentioned Jennifer Coolidge.
And then my favorite, Cedric the Entertainer, as the sheriff or the police officer.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was the one that threw me off.
That was a wild one.
That was the one that threw me off. Like,
that's so bananas.
So I have a thing I think about a lot with movies, adaptations of books, and want to play kind of a game with you guys. It's called, Do You Think the Actor Read the Book?
Oh, okay, yeah. Let's do
Definitely. Let's play that game.
That's a good one.
Cedric Entertainer 100% did not read the book.
Hell no. He's got like five lines. He's
he
not
doesn't
reading
care.
The book for
yeah,
that.
He's like, that's not worth my time.
Meryl Streep, I think, read the whole thing. Like, read every book that was out at
the
time.
I feel like she does her homework.
Yeah.
I think she did.
Yes, because she commits so hard. And you know what? She's the most overqualified to be in this movie. I don't... way I speak about this movie might make it seem like I hate it. I do not hate it. I enjoy this movie still, in spite of the many things that are not perfect about it. But Meryl Streep is so overqualified to be Aunt Josephine.
And she goes all in. She is not half-assing it at all.
Oh, yeah. She was so
good. Her and Olaf. Mm-hmm.
That's why she's Meryl Streep. She doesn't do anything halfway. She does everything all the way.
And I did love the scenes with her and Olaf.
As Captain Sham. They were great together. They're like weird flirty back and forth. Yeah. Hilarious.
What do y'all think about Luis Guzman? Do you think he read the book?
I think he skimmed.
You know what? I think he probably asked somebody about the books, and then somebody probably took him aside and said, okay, so here's what happens in these books, right? So there's these kids, and their parents die, and everywhere they go, the guardians just get worse and worse. But then wait, because halfway through, it's not about that. It's a mystery story where they're just running away from the bad guy, but the places they go to are still very bad and full of stupid grown-ups, right? And you're going to be one of those stupid grown-ups.
Luis Guzman's asleep at this point.
Yeah, but he wakes up and he's like, no, it's cool. Great. I got it.
How many lines does my character have? Jim Carrey, I think, read it.
Yeah, he definitely read it.
He definitely read at least the first three. Yeah. I don't know if he like devoured the series.
He probably read them with his daughter, I would think, because he's got a daughter who I think would have been just about the right age around this time, because this was 2004?
Yeah.
Because we had a moment of deep sadness when we realized that it's almost 20 years since 2004.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
That's absolutely horrific.
Hey, speak for yourself. I've never looked or felt better, and I'm 34.
I've never seen you look better, Jeff.
Yeah.
Oh,
your face looks so smooth.
Talk about tall, dark, and handsome.
You're seeing my dark side right now.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What do y'all think about Catherine O'Hara? She was the judge.
Yeah.
I would believe that she did.
I think she read him to her kids.
Yeah. I would believe that she, she would get in. Like, she seems like somebody who might look up more information to decide if she needs to read it. And then she's going to say, you know what? What the heck? I'm going to read this.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Timothy Spall?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. At the very least, he may not have read the full books, but he definitely read like a full summary
synopsis
of the entire plots, because he's a classic actor. He researches the part, he brings the character to life, and I'm sure he probably can improvise, but he seems like a kind of a contrast to Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey, you just describe the scene to him. Maybe you give him a few lines and you say, okay, go do Jim Carrey stuff. But Timothy Spall is very, very classical. He will do it like down to the ink if you want him to.
So I have a game that's pretty similar. We don't have to take too long on this, but it's another game I think about with these kind of movies. And it's a game I like to call, do you think the actor remembers being in this?
Yeah. That is a valid choice. Jane Lynch, straight out the gate, no.
If you went up to him with a copy of the DVD of this movie and you asked him to sign it, how many of them would be like, oh, right, I was in that film. I remember that film.
Dustin Hoffman?
No, I
don't remember that they were in it. I think they have to remember what they're there, if they were in it, and what the character they played.
Oh,
too.
That's another level of the game. Do they know the name of their character? Yeah. I think only...
Do they know the character that they played?
I think only Carrie and Streep would remember the character's name.
Yeah, I think the kids would, because I feel like this was probably one of their really big like roles that like got them off to like in being in bigger movies and stuff like that.
Their IMDb's are not robust, I will say. Although, the actor plays Klaus, his only other big film credit was Road to Perdition, which if you guys have listened to our pod, I have a segment called Road to Pretension, which is my second favorite pun I've ever come up with.
Please look forward to
Thank
that.
Thank you, Jeff. So that's a fun thing. But like all the hench people, none of them remember being in this film.
No, absolutely not.
Jennifer Coolidge, no way. No way for her. No way for, I don't think, I highly doubt Dustin Hoffman remembers.
No,
Dustin Hoffman forgot the next night.
You know what? The other female hench person, I would say she remembers this movie pretty well because I've seen her in a couple of other things. But apart from one episode of Law & Order SVU and one season of Hung on HBO, I don't think she's got that many things that people are coming up to her
for. No, I looked at her IMDb yesterday. It's not popping.
No, trust me. This is a movie that was for a big series, and Nickelodeon was all up in it, and it was during like the golden age of Nickelodeon. She remembers that.
We can stop with the games there, as fun as they are. Those are things I genuinely do in my head as I'm watching these movies, especially adaptations.
Those are all really valid games to be playing in your head as you're watching those movies.
I don't have games, but I've got two things that I wanted to ask you guys. Like, I've actually got a couple written down, but I'll just keep it to these two, just because these are things that I made notes throughout the whole movie while I was watching it, because I wanted to have plenty to talk about. But I got two things in particular that I thought... Well done. I thought these things would be interesting things to bring to you guys. So the first thing, like, I was struck by a lot of things about how they designed this movie, even if the content itself wasn't great. Like, the makeup was great, the architecture was great, the costumes were great, and they did get nominated for those things. Mm-hmm. The one they ended up winning was this movie got the Academy Award for Best Makeup. Mm-hmm. And I got curious, so I looked it up. I said, what was its competition?
Ooh, good
idea. Its competition was The Sea Inside, which is based on a real-life film about a man who was left quadriplegic after an accident and spent 28 years fighting for his right to die.
How much makeup was in that movie?
Beats me.
Does that include, like, limb makeup?
Oh,
like,
that's what I'm imagining. Maybe it was prosthetics.
Yeah, if you're using a prosthetic or if you're doing like a wound, that counts as makeup.
I don't know. I've seen some of the movies that have won Best Makeup, and trust me, it was not about impressive or special effects makeup. It was just about doing a good job making the actors look the way they were supposed to look on camera. Because the other nominee that year was The Passion of the Christ.
Oh, Lordy.
Christ Almighty.
Oh, Lordy is exactly correct. Oh, Lordy, a phrase which here means it was a film about our Lord and Savior Jesus. No, I'm not going to preach that here.
To be fair, though, I feel like there's a lot of makeup in that film, too.
Yeah, there's...
Well, sure there was.
There's a decent amount, yeah.
Yeah, sure there was.
Blood.
But here's what I want to know. Since it was up against a depressing movie and a really depressing movie, I'll let you decide which of those is which. Did it win because the makeup truly was spectacular, or did it win because that's what it was up against that year?
I think it was because it was spectacular, and I think the main reason is because of Olaf's disguises. I mean, he's playing, like,
That's
three
true.
Different
yeah.
people.
And they pulled it off pretty well. And
exactly. Like, I mean...
Yeah, he does look like three separate humans for the most part.
At least 40% of their makeup budget went to Jim Carrey.
Exactly.
Oh, easily.
But
I think
40%
of their budget went to Jim Carrey.
That helps. And then you know, Craig Ferguson... He was pretty well dressed up. I mean, like, the makeup to have, like...
Craig Ferguson looks like they let him do his own makeup. I'm not sugarcoating that. Craig Ferguson looks like he did his own makeup. And the same goes for the two, like, chalk white...
Yeah.
White face.
Yeah,
absolutely,
quote unquote.
Women. Absolutely.
Now, here's the other thing I wanted to know from you guys, because every time I watch this now, especially seeing what Neil Patrick Harris did with the series, I can't help but wonder, if we had continued on, what Jim Carrey's interpretations of these other Count Olaf personas would have looked like, because here's the ones we don't get.
So
we don't get Shirley from The Miserable Mill.
I want her.
We don't get Coach Genghis from The Austere Academy. We don't get Gunther from The Ersatz Elevator, please. We don't get Detective Dupin from The Vile Village. We don't get Matthias from Human Resources in The Hostile Hospital. And we don't get Kit Snicket from The End. So here's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. Of those characters that we don't get to see Jim Carrey do as Olaf, which one would excite you the most?
It's got to be Shirley for me.
Shirley, for sure. Yeah, I was thinking Shirley.
I was just thinking
Gunther.
That too, actually.
Gunther, I think, would maybe be too similar to
some of the other ones.
Stefano.
Yeah.
But it would be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to see him do Shirley because he would ham it up. He would have such a fun time with that.
It'd be so good.
I really would love to see him in a drag type character because I feel like with a movie makeup budget, they would bring in somebody like Raven, who does RuPaul's makeup now, and actually, like, make the effort to try to make it look like drag makeup. But obviously, since it's Olaf, it can't be good drag makeup. Because if it's too good, then that ruins the joke of, oh, everybody doesn't see through the charade. The one that would excite me the most, just because this is my absolute hands down favorite Olaf persona of all time, is Detective Dupin.
Yes, that is also my favorite.
I want to see Jim Carrey take a shot at being the cool detective.
It's not
how did
cool.
I know this is coming?
Everything is
how did
the
I know Jeff would pick this one?
You know what? When you don't let Jim Carrey be a detective, it's not very cool.
It's not so cool. I'm right there with you, Jeff. That is my favorite Olaf disguise. It cracked me up just constantly. But I will say the scene I wish we got to see with Jim Carrey is in the Grim Grotto, and he has his new laugh.
Oh.
Oh, he snorts, snort, sniggles, shipping errors.
Yeah.
It would be like a 20-minute scene that they would try to cut down to like 10. It would be glorious.
Oh, yeah. Jim Carrey coughs as Olaf for 10 minutes would become a viral video on YouTube, no question.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that's the point in the series. This is one of the things that made me so impressed with Lemony Snicket's writing, and it's a shame we don't get to see this brought across in the films, because I think they changed this up for the TV series, where after we get through the hostile hospital, it's not about Olaf putting on a persona anymore, and it's not about him trying to kidnap the Baudelaires to get their fortune so much anymore. It's about him trying to stop the Baudelaires from figuring out the mystery of VFD. And that, not only is that a good change, they do it at almost precisely the middle.
Yes.
Which is really, really just fantastic writing. And it would be cool to see that shift in Jim Carrey's, you know, character.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that in one of the Road to Pretension episodes. It may have been Vile Village or Hospital. But yeah, it definitely seems very intentional. Snicket switches how the whole pace and the kind of the cyclical nature of the first half of the series kind of flips on its head. And the children go from guardian after guardian to having no one and being completely on their own. And yeah, like you said, it really, because I think the thing with Neil Patrick Harris, I haven't seen the whole show. I've only seen the first two
Did they do everything through the entire, all the books? Did they cover all the books?
Yeah, each book is two episodes.
Oh, okay.
So you get a setup and then you get a, I would say, resolution. Conclusion and follow through.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the thing maybe he does do a good job, but the thing I don't think Neil Patrick Harris gets as well with Olaf as Carrey does is like the really, truly dark, scary side of Olaf. And I don't know if that's Neil Patrick Harris's fault or not, because the writing's a little more like jokey in the show, at least the first few episodes. But like that shot in the movie where Olaf's just rocking back and forth, Jim Carrey has like that lanky, like kind of like cartoonish frame, and him just sitting in that rocking chair, and you can kind of see the glint of the knife. It's so incredibly disturbing. I don't know if Neil Patrick Harris pulls that off, or I wish we could have seen Jim Carrey do later Olaf to really get that evil dark.
I think because Jim Carrey he carries that level of crazy in his soul, and that level of insanity. It's that person who's insane enough where if you hit them just the wrong way, they're going to kill you.
Exactly. Right. And I feel that way with every Jim Carrey character. I mean, I can kind of read it as
he's got a
really
very dark
creepy
side.
Yeah.
He's got grit, which is why he's able to do, like, he does, sometimes he'll do, like, quirky indie movies, or he'll do, like, he did a really weird, scary thriller movie about the number 23, and you know he can do dark. Neil Patrick Harris isn't somebody who really does dark. I mean, for crying out loud, when he did the concert version of Sweeney Todd, they made him Toby.
Oh.
Like,
I mean,
the
which
purest
is
soul
no,
in
that
the
makes
whole
sense.
Show.
Because he's so pretty. He's so pretty, you know?
Just,
like,
he doesn't he doesn't really have that darkness to him. And Jim Carrey... Oh,
I'd love to see Jim Carrey do Sweeney Todd.
Oh my God, yes.
That'd be great.
Thinking about something else that they changed, and this was actually one of my favorite things that they completely made up for the movie. And I love seeing Jim Carrey's, like, his faces and his reactions during the scene, because it's not even about him, but he still manages to find ways to make it about him. Is the scene where he parks the car on the train tracks and it's supposed to wipe out the orphans? Because that's got to be, since they cut and pasted the wedding to the end of the movie, they have to have a different explanation for why Count Olaf gets the kids taken away from him. So they said, okay, car on the train tracks, but that's not what it is. We're going to take him away because we think he let the kids drive the car. But Jim Carrey's face, every time they show him getting more and more excited about these kids getting hit by a car, and then suddenly it doesn't smash the car, and he goes, what?
I felt a kindred spirit in Jim Carrey when I was watching him. Like, he has an expressive face like I do, where you can, like, relay, like, people are like, I don't use my eyebrows. I'm like, I do eyebrow choreography all the time. Thank you very much. Like, it is a thing that just happens when you have a very expressive face. And he's just someone who's like, like Jeff just mentioned in that one scene where he's like all in one, like the highs and the lows, all you can see, everything in his face. And I think that's fun.
Oh, I love it. He's
it's either
so
that
fun to watch.
Or the fact that since they completely changed up the whole, I think the one that they changed the most of his personas, they made a lot of changes to how they did Captain Sham.
Yeah.
Because they cut out, I think they cut more of, I think they cut more of that one out than they did of the Reptile Room.
Yeah, definitely.
First of all, risky move bringing Suicide into a Nickelodeon movie.
Right.
Yeah.
That I think was, you know, that was true to the book. So that was still mm-hmm. It was a risky thing to do. But what I liked that they brought into it was how they brought back all those references to the things that Aunt Josephine mm-hmm. is terrified of happening to her, and then made it into this big action sequence with these kids so that they have to escape the house that's crumbling around them.
Love that part.
That was a movie thing they made up that I actually thought was wise.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think that played really well.
And I love the aspect of them using all of the fears that Aunt Josephine has and mm-hmm. like all of them coming true. That's just...
It feels like something Snicket would have done. It seems like a Snicket thing.
I was
going to
say, that feels like a Snicket choice. Yeah, something that's so ridiculous when you hear it the first time, you're like, that would never happen. And then you're like, ah, but it is a series of unfortunate events, friends.
So
this
course.
Is exactly what's been happening the whole time. All the things we thought would never happen are the exact plot line.
And he loves doing that. He loves paying off like random setups like that. So it felt very mm-hmm. true to his writing, that whole part. I really
like
that.
Yeah, he'd be like, oh, there never a fridge would never fall through. I'm on the top floor of my apartment building. A fridge would never fall through and slam me, and like 5 seconds later you just fridge falls down. It's like, oh, it fell from a helicopter that was transporting a fridge halfway across the town. Oops. It's like, what are the chances of that? What are the odds?
I mean, transporting a fridge via helicopter sounds like one of those side bits where Snicket talks about being in random chaotic situations.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just wild.
Like, I'm writing this as I'm inside of a church organ, timing my types to the music so no one hears me.
Yeah, like riding an elephant. I'm trying to think of something else. You'd be like riding an elephant on a zoo on a tightrope. Like,
yeah, just
with a pile of knives underneath him, and he has only a candlestick to write with.
Yeah. I talk about it in the show all the time. We tend to, like, every episode I have a segment where I just laugh at the evil things Olaf does, but I love the idea of someone being cartoonishly evil. It just cracks me up. And it's like you said with the gas station where he's just cackling, like he just can't wait to like see these children be crushed by a train, which is the most just capital E cartoon evil thing, and it cracks me up every time.
You know, I think I figured out why neither adaptation is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
The cartoonishness of the characters is their true essence, so they should have done this whole thing as a cartoon.
I read a lot of fantasy, and I think that about a lot of things. Whenever the mm-hmm. characters are almost too big to be true, it's hard to fit that into something that exists currently.
It's also a hard balance to strike because the cartoonish evil stuff is juxtaposed so well with the really deeply sad, truly traumatizing sorrow that the kids go through. And and the way
these kids just lost their parents.
Yeah, and Snicket like takes moments to reflect on it. One of my favorite lines:
going
"If you
up
lose
the stairs."
Going up the stairs, like losing a loved one is like going up the stairs and you missing a step, you know, or the one my favorite is, they said, if you've lost a loved one, you know what it's like. And if you haven't, you have no idea. And that's such mm-hmm. an honest, like real grounded, gut wrenching way to do that. And then like 5 minutes later, Olaf's like throwing tacks at a baby because he's evil. Yeah. I don't know. And so that's why like in a cartoon would be good in one way, but also like live action is good for the gritty stuff. So it's hard balance.
These books are like the perfect balance of like you said, like that cartoon evil, that like textbook evil, which is very like dark in itself, in its nature, and then like actual darkness. Like this is like the animated version of darkness, and then we are also including like the real life version of darkness currently working together at the same time in sync with one another, and no happiness, literally no happiness in this at all. Just like you move from book to book, but nothing is ever like resolved. You get to the end of the book, you're like, where's the resolution point? There isn't one. It doesn't exist.
You have to have that cartoonish aspect of it because otherwise it's not really palatable for
otherwise.
Anybody.
Yeah,
or like children,
it's too deep
right?
and dark.
Yeah, at that point it's just like misery.
No, it just becomes Passion of the Christ at that point.
I mean, but that's only second best makeup, so you know.
Wait, Passion of the Christ wasn't a kids movie? Because I distinctly remember a lot of groups were making a lot of kids see that movie when it came out.
I was in that group.
I saw it as a child. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably because of no reason.
It's the only movie my dad would let me watch that was R-rated before I turned 18. Yeah. He was like, I was like 11.
Yeah, my parents had to sign a permission form for me to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys see the movie Life of Brian. But it's Monty Python.
Far more satisfying interpretation of the Christ story.
Yeah, but I don't know if you guys, Monty Python, the Holy Grail, like the British comedians, super sarcastic, dry. It's their version of
the Passion of the Christ.
I think it came out before Passion of the Christ, but it's that story. But mm-hmm. it's like if people messed up and they got the wrong baby, and it was this guy named Brian, and he's not a god or anything. But I saw bits of it as a kid. Like, my parents were watching it, and I like kind of saw it. I thought that was Passion of the Christ for most of my life, and it was so confusing. Because everyone's like, it's so dark and like brutal, and I was like,
I was laughing the whole time.
I thought it was just the weirdest, like, goofiest movie. I was so confused.
I love that for you.
That's wild.
I think better for a child.
Yeah.
I think I had more fun that way.
I mean, yeah. Honestly, like, the way that I saw it was at my CCD or Sunday school mm-hmm. class, and my dad was the teacher. And so he was the one who was, like, making other people sign this. I automatically got to go in because that was my dad. But, I mean, was it a movie I wanted to see anyway? No.
Of course not.
I didn't.
No.
I was fine. That was the one R-rated movie I was fine, like, leave me out of it. I don't need it. I don't want it. Like, I'll go see something else.
As a kid, I don't have the brain to, like, comprehend, like, the suffering of a god for his people. Like, I'm not there. I'm not getting that kind of story.
You know what? I was an angsty young man who was just starting to get old enough and cynical enough to question everything my parents tried to teach me as a child. So when The Passion of the Christ came out, I was all for it. And my parents were thrilled, but not. Then they found out why I was willing to go and see that movie, and it was not because because you know what, I didn't know all those things about Mel Gibson. And I just wanted to see a version of that actually looked like what it probably looks like when you do that, because when you're a goth teen, that's what you're into.
I like describing the crucifixion of Jesus as that, you know, when you do that thing you do, it looks like that when
that
you do
thing
it
you do.
So, not to derail our podcast about Mel Gibson film Passion of the Christ, just wanted to wrap up.
Come back to Christcast next week.
Yeah, Christcast. Oh, that's good. That's got to be taken.
Yeah, it probably is.
But that's probably a real show.
It's got to be.
Not send people there.
If it's not, we need to get it, because that's easy money.
Sure.
And then sell it to someone.
Yeah, no, give it to someone who'll do it, but I want that IP. I got a few IMDb facts. But we covered a few of them, like the Oscar for hair and makeup.
Yeah.
And it makes sense when I heard this, but Tim Burton was originally pegged to direct the movie. And you can kind of see that in the sets and
that
stuff,
makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. I'm surprised he wasn't.
Yeah.
Right?
As steampunk as the movie and story is, mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense.
And as gray and gothy as everybody looked, that definitely looked like something, you know, with Tim Burton. Yeah.
I mean, and Jim Carrey looks like a living Jim Burton character.
Yes.
Right.
Like, he literally looks like a weird iteration of Jack Skellington.
It really does. And unsurprisingly, Johnny Depp was supposed to be Olaf. I'm so glad we didn't get that.
If I were going to have a different Olaf, it would be Tim Curry.
A young Tim Curry?
That makes perfect sense because he did perfectly.
Yeah.
He narrated all but three.
Amazing narration by him. And I could see him doing
perfect narration.
The makeup and like doing the characters physically as well.
I could definitely see
that. Did he do the audiobooks?
Yeah.
Most of them.
The newer.
He did all but
I've only
three
read them.
From books 4, 5, and 6, for some reason, they switched over to the author himself reading them. I'm going to be honest. I wish that Tim Curry had been the one to do those books mm-hmm. because I would rather hear him go, "Hello, cake sniffers."
Yes.
Than
yes.
hear the author go, "Hello, cake sniffers." Oh boy, I just can't wait to be the most special girl in Austere Academy. Oh.
I will say.
You guys can't see this, but Jeff literally turned into a cartoon mouse for a second.
Yeah. Pretty
That's
quick
what
transition.
I saw. Yeah.
He just won best makeup right there, friends.
Oh boy, with this fancy new set of ears, I can hear twice as well. Oh.
That is wild, Jeff.
Speaking of recognizable voices, there's one point where something falls off the house, or the house is falling, and in Lake Lachrymose, and it like hits a duck.
The Affleck duck.
It is.
It is.
They had tie-ins.
Yeah, it is.
It's the literal. It's animated, but like they did the design of the Affleck duck for it.
I remember that being like a really big thing when the movie came out. Like people, that was like a piece of like as a teen, I was not really in with like the celebrity like movie knowledge stuff. But that was one thing that I had procured from my friends who were into that kind of like into like the behind the scenes movie things. And I knew that the Affleck duck was coming when I sat down for that movie.
Which means that Gilbert Godfrey gets an acting credit for being in that movie because he was.
Oh, is he the Affleck duck?
I did not know that.
No.
Yeah. He's got the parrot from Aladdin and
I knew
that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's Affleck.
I knew.
Oh, yeah. He's probably made more money off those ads than all of his other work combined. Just saying one word.
He did make money off that, and now he is dead.
Yeah,
he's as dead as every dead animal that has ever died.
Yeah, it was pretty recently. It was like under a year ago now at this point.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right. Yes. Actually, they did a pretty nice tribute. A lot of comedians did a pretty nice, pretty touching tribute to him when he passed. You could tell that in spite of being a perverted weirdo, he touched a lot of lives, but not like
not touch,
that.
Touch.
Right.
Consensual perverted weirdo, which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm assuming if I am wrong on that.
I'm sure that's what he told his probation officer.
Yeah, probably.
Probably the weirdest fact about this is genuinely the actor who played Klaus at the, I don't know if it's the premiere or like one of the showings that he attended of the movie. He was informed in the middle of the film that his house had caught on fire. No one died or anything.
Oh, no.
For those of y'all listening, we all had a shock face during that silence.
Oh, no.
Yeah, my jaw literally fell all the way to the floor and I had to pick it back up. It was weird.
That wasn't a glitch. That was a genuine silence.
I saw that on IMDb and I was like, there's no way. And so I had to Google it. It sounds true.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. That's if I was in a movie about a fire and then like losing my parents in that fire and I was the kid in the movie, if someone walked up to me and said that to me on the red carpet, I'd be like, haha, good joke. Aww,
yeah.
Did they at least pull him out of the premiere and tell him they had to inform him of an extremely unfortunate event? Because if you're not going to go that hard,
I hope so. You might as well go in all the way.
If you're going to ruin the kid's day, just like give him an instance of humor.
I think you have to make sure that no one has died, though.
True.
That's the only thing.
Probably a good idea.
You gotta be like, what is the extent of the damage?
Of course no one died. They're not gonna pull him out of the premiere to tell him somebody has died. They're gonna let him enjoy the movie and then tell him someone has
died. Fair enough. But I would say the same thing about his house being on fire. It's nothing he's gonna be able to do about it.
Yeah, valid point too. Yeah, true.
But
I mean, on fire, burned down, those are not necessarily the same things.
Yeah.
Also, were there people or animals in the house?
Yeah,
or is this one of those weird emancipation situations, that rhymes, where he lives alone because he's got terrible parents and he's Macaulay Culkin?
Well, he's had the career of Macaulay Culkin.
Right.
In that he had one movie he's known for.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it caught on fire, didn't burn down. Because I think if it totally burned down and someone died, that would have come up in the articles.
I was gonna say, I feel like you would have seen that in the news articles that you were reading.
Exactly. And then so I just have one final fun fact.
Okay.
One more celebrity cameo that I didn't see.
Okay. I was looking for her in the movie because I've read this fact on IMDb.
Uh huh. I'm wondering if I know who it is, but go ahead.
It's another Harry Potter alum.
I know who you're going to say.
Go on.
It is a Tim Burton connected figure. It is Miss Helena Bonham Carter. Is in this film.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know where she is. I saw her in the character listing when I was looking through the... Because I actually have it pulled up on another screen. Mm-hmm. I have a list of the... She played Beatrice Baudelaire.
So I think she's in the photo at the end.
Oh.
Ah, is that where she is? Oh, it has her...
Really?
Oh, wait, that's
Beatrice
not,
isn't
that's
in
not...
it.
Yeah, like, Beatrice is, I'm wondering if maybe they were slotting people for like another movie.
That's what I'm wondering.
And she was slotted for that part.
Yeah.
They
why
never
else
made
would
the movie.
She be in it?
Yeah, I know that.
It is always a tragic thing when you're watching a movie that really thinks it's gonna have sequels and it's like really setting it up and then you're not getting it. Wrapping up, I have one big thing that I need to say about the movie, but I want to check if you guys have anything else you want to say about it.
I'm gonna throw out a couple of rapid fires here. They made these orphans into emo kids because every time they were alone, it just felt sad. It didn't feel like they were having these moments of, why are adults like this? Yeah. This is a confusing atmosphere for us to be in. Two, Uncle Monty, favorite guardian, played by one of my favorite actors who I felt like was just right. He wasn't overqualified to be in the movie like Meryl Streep. Yes. He didn't underperform it like a lot of the hench people, who, by the way, didn't feel like hench people because they didn't get to do very henchy things. No. They were just kind of there.
Yeah,
they didn't feel like hench people. Yeah, they're described that way specifically in the books. Yeah, they were the acting troupe, and they didn't even really get to do that very
much. Yeah, that was a part I didn't love.
But Uncle Monty, favorite guardian, loved how they did him.
Yes.
Stanley, the way they did Stefano, he looked like Stanley Tucci from The Lovely Bones, which creeps me out, and I can't get that image out of my head, so good luck getting it out of your head.
Yeah, no, that's there forever.
I haven't seen The
Lovely Bones. Stanley Tucci looks like Stefano.
The thing, something about, yeah.
I'm helpful.
That is helpful.
So, something about Sonny never quite set right with me in this movie.
I don't like that casting.
It's the fact that it's not the casting, it's the subtitles. Because with Sonny in the books, she does her baby talk, you get a translation, but it's conversational. It feels like she's just talking to her siblings. They turn Sonny into this stand-in, sarcastic quip machine who everything she says is just so off the cuff, which... Not that Sunny isn't bright, just that that's not Sunny. Like, she talks to her siblings a
she
lot.
She contributes.
But every time
ideas.
They give her a line, she's saying things like, this lady has been to Crazy Town. Scratch that. She's the mayor of Crazy Town. And I'm thinking, okay, somebody watched Lewis Black too much with this baby in the room, and now this baby is repeating things. Somehow they made it look like Aunt Josephine has a more depressing house than Count Olaf. And I don't know how you accomplish that, but something about Count Olaf's house was less depressing than Aunt Josephine's house.
Well, his was like fun, though. It felt like someone who liked the way it was, at least.
I think the undertones of that house were also more like yellow, and her house tones were more like a blue undertone, which I think kind of pulled into the creepiness a little bit more.
Yeah.
And the darkness, it was like a dark instead of like a light dark, you know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, right. I know exactly
yellow
what you mean.
Versus blue undertones.
Yeah, but it is a good point, Jeff.
And then I'll just leave these last two things because they both pertain to the wide window.
Mm-hmm. Not wide enough.
Klaus has read 15 okay first no the world is wide enough 15 books on sailing, really?
I also question.
I don't
that.
Know if there are 15 books on sailing. You're telling me this kid read 15 books on sailing and he never sailed. You can't say he read 15 books on sailing and not make that part of his character. That's a lot of books on any one particular thing.
Depends what you mean by on sailing. Like if it's the history of ships and sailing, I could see that.
Yeah, like how to. Yeah.
Like 15 books that involve or mention sailing is very different than 15 books on sailing. That's what they say. He read 15 books on sailing and 2 books on meteorology.
Like if you could count a Moby Dick, I would have no problem with it. But what I think they're implying is there was like manuals on how to sail, like sailboats,
well,
like modern sailboats.
All the books that they reference him reading are reference books. Like they're not.
I know, but with weirdly specific titles that are convenient to the plot. Yeah, no, I get that. It's just, it's a weird number of books on sailing.
It's weird that he could get that many books on sailing. That's the weirder part.
Actually, I lied, because I made it sound like there was one more thing. There's two more things that I want to say, and then I swear to Wizard God I'm done after this. It's funny, I thought of how in the beginning of your guys' show lately you've been saying only the cheapest editing software will be used. Mm-hmm. I feel like that same principle was applied to the CGI software for this film, because between the Lachrymose leeches, the incredibly deadly Viper, just anything that involved like CGI special effects, it just felt so cheap.
I was pleasantly surprised because of it being 2004. I was expecting the worst. Yeah. I went in with really low expectations.
I don't understand the money they spent on this movie.
It went to Jim Carrey.
It went to Jim Carrey.
Fine. Jim Carrey and then his makeup.
Yes.
There's one, the very last thing, I swear this is the last thing I'm going to say. Ever since I saw this movie 20 years ago, every now and then, when I am alone, I will sing the following to myself.
Oh no, it's going
to
be stuck in my head.
Nothing in the world will keep the cow from his beloved bride. Nothing in the world will keep the cow from his beloved bride. Nothing in the world. Nothing in the world. Nothing. Nothing.
That song goes hard.
It does.
That is a bop. I love that song. Unironically, that song like is a great opener.
I wanted more songs. I wanted like this whole show to be a fully realized musical with Olaf getting his own number.
They just kept going, and with that song for another 20 minutes, I was on board. They had me hooked. I wanted to see the play at that point.
Yeah.
More harmonies. Oh, so like good. Bring in like 20 or 30 pale white women.
Nothing in the world. Nothing in the world. Nothing in the world. That's my dream party is 20 or 30 pale white women. But that's
pale white woman.
A personal thing we don't need to get into. Juliana, do you have any last thoughts?
I mean, I feel like this movie is iconic.
It is.
And it's one of those movies that I saw in theater on accident, kind of, just because it was what was playing in the theater. I remember we saw it because every Christmas we would go and see a movie on the 26th with my family. And we're like, what's playing? Oh, we're going to play this, to see this movie. Which I would have seen eventually anyway, but it's just wild to me have memories of seeing this in the theater and then realizing it's 20 years old. And I think Jim Carrey was the right choice. And I feel like the other casting was absolutely bananas wild because, again, where did Jane Lynch come from? Where? Literally who pulled her out of their butt?
Pretty early on. And yeah. Glee hadn't happened yet.
No.
Like she did a couple here and there things, but Glee was really like the thing that was a big,
that
and the L Word were like really big turning points for her. By the way, just since we're talking about her, read her book.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yes, she has written, and she published, it's actually been a couple years since it came out. I think it's called Happy Accidents or something, but Jane Lynch wrote a memoir and it was incredibly well done, I thought. Yeah, Happy Accidents is what it's called.
Did she talk about a series of unfortunate events in it? Did it come up?
No, she does not talk about a series of unfortunate events.
Her first big break.
No, although she does talk about how one of her biggest and first breaks in acting was there was this stage version of a Brady Bunch that she was very heavily involved in because she had to do that a lot because she was the perfect Mrs. Brady.
Oh, I could see that. Who's producing this stage show of the Brady Bunch? Where's this come? What?
I think it started off as a college. I think it was one of those shows where it started off as a college project, but it got really popular locally, so it turned into an off-Broadway type deal, and then they took it out on the road.
Is it like sarcastic? Is it like a spoof or something, or is it just straight up an adaptation?
I don't recall. I want to say that it was like the movies. It was a bit spoofy, but not so spoofy that they're making fun of everything. Just that, like, they're clearly, it's like a very, it's like to the series what, you know, a Harry Potter musical or Puffs is.
Okay.
It's just faithful enough to the source material that it doesn't feel like it's, you know, lampooning it entirely.
Weird. Huh. That stuff always fascinates me.
Do yourself a favor. Read the book and get it from her perspective, because she'll tell it better than me.
Noted.
Jess, any last thoughts? Anything we didn't bring up?
There was just one thing that I did notice between the series and the movie is that the series was definitely more diverse in their actors. Whereas, like, in the movie, literally, Cedric the Entertainer is the only person of color that I can think of. Luis Guzman.
Right.
And they're the only two people that I could see that were not white.
Yeah,
it is a weird going from the show, which is seems very purposefully cast diversely to, you know, Whitesville in the movie.
And so I do feel like it benefited as a result of that.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that I really like about the series. And then, it's pretty iconic and it's well done. And I do most of the major changes that they make to the storyline, I think, make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it just would have been weird. It would have been interesting to see where they went with all these things they were switching up. Because they get the photograph, like the one in the Heimlich Hospital, in the first movie. So, like, I don't know. I'd be curious to see how they took all that stuff, where they were going with the story. Right. So, I really liked it. I think it's one of those. I wouldn't say it's a great film, but I love watching it. But I have one major issue.
What's that?
Why wasn't Klaus wearing glasses? What was that?
Solid.
Yeah, that's true.
Issue.
Yeah, that's true.
Because what would they have done if they made another movie and then they go to,
you know what,
the lumber mill?
The whole plot is about him breaking
his
glasses.
I'll tell you exactly why he wasn't wearing glasses. They would have written in a reason for him to need glasses because your vision, you know what? He was at that age where I had just started to need glasses myself. So it makes sense to me that he might not have them, and then they could write that in that he suddenly needs them, and then they get him like the cheapest, worst pair of glasses ever. And that's why he goes to the eye doctor.
Okay.
Because he realizes he needs them in the first place.
But why
so
do
not
that?
Not great, but I could see them do it. I'll tell you exactly why. Because I actually have a note in here that I didn't read about how this may have actually been one of my first awakenings as a person who realized they were not just attracted to cisgender women.
Yeah.
Because I remember crushing very, very hard Craig on Ferguson. Violet and crushing very, very hard on Klaus, both of whom were around the same age that I was when this came out. And I remember thinking how interesting it was that they were both very, very different in terms of their look, because Violet looks like every girl I dated up to and including my wife.
She's very
every
Hot Topic.
Single. Yeah. Yes. The Hot Topic ladies. Yes. And Klaus represents the kind of guys that I would have been into. I like the bookish, smart, dorky, maybe, you know, kind of. Spencer's wiggling his eyebrows at me. Yes, Spencer, very, very, very
same.
Much,
I got the same
very
taste
much a hottie
there.
Over there. But see, that's what I remember thinking was, it's interesting to me that these people, in addition to being this one's a boy, this one's a girl, their interests, they're just their fashion sense, and that makes me think they took the glasses off of him, because I can see them bringing this young man in for a costume fitting and thinking, you know what, there's potential in this young actor to do well after this, which isn't how it went, or there's potential in this series to be kind of driven by how attractive these two young people
True.
Are. So maybe we want to make them more appealing to younger viewers by not putting glasses on them.
Yeah, it definitely feels like an executive note. They're like, we can't have our lead wearing glasses. They're going to think he's a nerd.
They do stuff like that all the time. And they do it in reverse, too. They'll take classically handsome actors. Like, I forget his name, but I remember the guy who played Henry on Ugly Betty. Super dork the whole time. But then you find out that off camera, he is your classically hot guy. Suave hair, great fashion sense, terrific, you know, goes to the gym body. Not that that's the only attractive kind of body, just that we all know what sells in
yeah,
Hollywood.
No, I get what you're saying.
Even now, we know. I can see them doing that. I can see them trying to increase the appeal for a certain demographic by taking away the glasses, which I don't necessarily agree with, but Hollywood is a fickle pickle, so I can see them looking at it that
Indeed.
Way.
It definitely shows the difference between like how they produce things then and now. We're like, they're like, he's glasses in the book. Who cares? He's got to be a star. We can't have
yeah.
glasses. But now you wouldn't do that, because fans would be losing their minds. Like if you took away Klaus's glasses.
First of all, when they made this movie, these characters read older to me, like the actors.
Definitely.
Yeah.
They see, it's like when they made Game of Thrones, which in that case, they aged the characters up on purpose. The content was iffy enough as
yeah.
it was. But with these characters, these actors look older than the parts that they're playing.
Definitely, especially
Klaus. But with the TV series, the Violet and the Sunny that they had in the Netflix show look like they were the perfect age to be playing those parts.
No, they really
did. And they looked exactly like I thought they would in the books.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that cast is appearance-wise.
Where in the books does it even say that Violet is the queen of the steampunk goth dress that she wears the whole time? That's not in the book.
That's not what I read into it, for sure.
That's not, but you know, I mean, it's these first three books where they keep their own clothes the whole
mm-hmm.
time anyway. A lot of the other places that they end up going, they end up getting some kind of uniform because they work in the mill. They go to the academy. They live with the snooty fashion people for a while. They go to a circus. That becomes their look for like that particular book. But for these first three, they get to wear just whatever their clothes happen to be. And I think that they styled this girl up and they put her in this steampunk goth dress because they knew it would be appealing.
And then in The Wide Window, they put her in like a general's uniform in The Wide Window. It almost reminded me of My Chemical Romance, but
oh,
it was like
yeah.
a teal color.
Yeah.
It was like the button.
But it had that like band.
Yeah, you're not going to make an argument against Gothy and include My Chemical Romance in the conversation.
Well, I feel like Olaf's wig at The Marvelous Marriage was also inspired by My Chemical Romance, because it's that straight,
oh,
bangy
God,
black hair.
I love
hair.
That wig. I love that wig. It's amazing. Just, it's so coiffed, and it's just
so coiffed.
Like, you can't even see the lace front.
You can't.
I love that wig. That's a wig reveal.
Yes.
In one shot, it's like, first of all, reveal outfit. Love that part. And then pan away from Count Olaf, pan to Count Olaf. How quickly did they get that wig on him? Wigs don't work that
way. No, they do not.
Trust me.
Tell me about
wigs
it.
Wigs don't work that
way. I've done shows where I had to do many a quick change. Wigs aren't that easy to pull off.
I have to ask you guys this question before we're done here.
Please.
I don't know if you were planning to ask me this. If you were, I am sorry, but I have to ask you this. Did it suck?
You're bringing me back. We're back to our old days.
My census is that it did not suck.
I would agree.
Much not suck.
I do not think it did.
I can't say it sucked.
It is still enjoyable. If for nothing else, it gives us plenty to talk about, and even for that, I can enjoy something these days, because thanks to my podcasty brain, if something can give me plenty to discuss and not all of it is how bad it was, I can enjoy it.
I like celebrating the weirdness, appreciating all these weird choices they had to make for this movie. That's always the thing that blows my mind, is all these things were decisions. Someone had to come up with that epic song and in the show, and I wanted to write it and make it happen, and I love that someone did that with their lives. Makes me really happy.
Me too.
I think that's about it for the movie discussion. If you guys have time, I have a quick little thing to talk about with y'all that I think you'll like. So, you guys, your show is about the Shadow and Bone series, which has season 2 out. We have not finished it yet. I apologize. But I found this article ranking 10 characters in the show by likability, and I found it to be wild.
Oh, okay.
And I want to get your take on
it. Okay.
Number 10, already they're wrong. Number 10's Alina.
You see, I'm not a big fan of... I think Alina is just... She's, like, just boring enough where she's not as exciting enough of a character, I feel like.
I agree, but I think it's totally wrong because of who they have above her at number 9, Mal. Who's got to be below
Mal
Alina.
Mal is definitely a 10. Mal has to be... Mal is way less
switch those.
Right, and I knew you would agree with me, Juliana.
Yeah, Mal's at the bottom regardless of what happens.
I'm not going to trash Jessie Mae Lee because she kills it for what they give her to work with, honestly.
Yeah.
But Alina Starkov is not the worst protagonist.
No.
She's like a likable version of that blonde chick from Orange is the New Black that no one cares about. Piper, what's her name?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who, by the way, is one of the worst protagonists ever.
Classic case of all the side characters are way more interesting than the main character. But number 8, my girl Baba Yaga, Bagra, is at number 8.
Oh, really?
Now, is this the characters themselves? Just not the actors' interpretations, just the characters?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of mixed. It's specifically about the show.
Yeah, the show characters.
But I think likability comes from these characters. It's a lot more about
the
writing.
Actor. Yeah,
I enjoy Bagra, but that's a fair ranking. She's not supposed to be likable.
Yeah. True. Number 7, Jenya.
She does have a redemption arc.
I can see that, though.
And I think that puts her up.
I would disagree because this means that if Zoya's on this list at all, she's obviously more likable than Jenya. And
I think Jenya's more likable than Zoya.
I agree.
Jenya's far more likable than Zoya.
Yeah,
so,
I don't think
Zoya's
on it because she should be well below.
Nowhere near it.
Well, there you go, Jenya. Then. Take Jenya off the list and put Zoya on it.
I agree.
Next.
6 is Nina.
I love her.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
I think Nina would be a little bit higher.
Well, with her being in the middle is interesting because it depends on how much info you have. If it's, you know, from the beginning of the Six of Crows book, then kind of. But from where you meet her in the series, especially in the second season.
In the show, I think she's fine. She's great. I enjoy her.
Yeah. I'm really wondering who's jostling for that top spot right now. In my head, I'm like,
it's okay, interesting. Number 5 is maybe the one I disagree with the most. Tolia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, first of all, Tolia and Tamar are tied for first place on my list, so you're not winning that one with me, pal.
Tolia reads to us like Sokka.
Oh, that actor should be Sokka.
If Sokka started off super hot and intelligent and he could totally get it, Tolia can get it, Tamar can... You know what? Tolia can get it and then go read philosophy, poetry, and then Tamar can come in and get it.
Yeah, when they bring up how he likes poetry, that's what I got sold. I was like, I'm saluting.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Give me
and
that.
It gets worse for me at number 4. Nikolai at 4.
They put him at 4?
Four.
See, I'm going to guess. Okay. I'm going to call it out here.
He's top 3.
Easy.
I think that Ben Barnes is going to come in first. Don't tell me if I'm right or not. Mm-hmm. And I think Kaz is going to be second. Jesper is going to be third. But in my head, it should be Kaz, based on the show, Kaz, then Nikolai. And like those are my top two, Kaz, Nikolai.
The Darkling better not be on this list.
I think he's going to be. He's Ben Barnes.
He can't be. No. You are not putting the Darkling on this list because of Ben Barnes being likable. Absolutely not.
I won't reveal.
I think he's going to be number one.
I won't reveal one way or the other.
Hell no.
I don't think he should be, but I think he's going to be number one.
Allegedly.
Number three is interesting, but it really depends on how you're defining likability. Kaz.
That's wrong.
Nope. I buy it.
Kaz Brekker is like,
I totally buy it.
Such a good
character. He is so morally challenging for people, but in terms of likability, I can get, especially when you find out what drives him and you realize he only robs stupid rich people. Yeah, I'm into that.
But where I get confused, is it likability of the character from the audience's perspective or likable like within their world, like how charming they are?
I think from the audience.
I mean,
well, you tell like us. You're the one looking at the list.
I guess I could just read the list.
Does it give descriptions or criteria?
It makes it more about the audience experiencing the character is what they're getting at.
Okay.
Which I was...
I would say he's a very solid three because he's morally questionable, but he only robs stupid rich people, and everything that has happened to him has clearly made him what he is. So yeah, he's a solid three.
I was going to say two, I'm going to put Jesper. I think number one, I'm going to keep Ben Barnes as my number one.
Okay.
No. I know who number one is. I'm not going to say, but I know who number one is.
Number one is my number one.
Yeah.
I will say.
I hope it's Inej.
I know who number one is.
I don't think it's going to be.
Number two is Inej.
Oh, it's Inej. Yeah. Okay. So who's number one? Is it Jesper or is it Ben Barnes? Kit or Ben?
Either way, it's a wild list. One or the other is not included.
Yeah.
Main characters in the show. But I can say, thankfully... Rightfully, they put Jesper at one.
Jesper's so likable.
Oh, good. Okay.
No,
thank God.
No.
Kit Younger is I think he's really likable.
No,
I love
no,
him. I'm with you.
No.
He's the most likable.
No,
I think he's great.
No. Yeah. Let me tell you how I really feel about this. No.
That's how you really feel.
You just
feel.
Want Tamar and Toya to be the top two, Jeff. And like, no offense.
Incorrect.
But you're not the only one you're in the minority of the people who think.
Incorrect.
Who's your number one?
The fact that Tamar is not on the list at all, how very dare disagree. Second,
I'm surprised Ben Barnes isn't on this list at all.
You know what? Put Inej maybe a little bit further down the list because she's very, very likable. I don't know how they picked these characters. I don't know how they chose these 10.
They're all over
this
the
is why
place.
I can't do top 10 lists at all. But you know what? I would put Jesper at 2. And number one, definitely, if we're talking about likability of character and actor, and you're not going to... No, stop shoving Nikolai in.
Like,
no, stop shoving Nikolai in my face. Let Nikolai shove Nikolai in my face. Shut up.
I don't even know who you're going to say is going to be number one. I have no guesses left, Jeff.
Because Weiland? I'm trying to explain to you, why Weiland Van Eck is the most likable. He's a sweet baby cinnamon roll.
Oh, no,
Excuse me.
Excuse me. You right
reclaiming
back.
My time. This is my moment. Let me have it. I have had it officially.
Let me tell you something, you ugly bitch.
Hey, shut up. This sweet little cinnamon roll of a boy has been almost murdered. He has been forced to live on the street, and then he got rescued by his by this incredibly sweet young man who he is very compatible with. And in spite of the fact that he has been forced to do crimes for a living, he still manages to have that incredibly sweet disposition. And by the way, in case you guys missed it, everybody would have died of poison if he didn't know anything about butterflies. I'd say that puts him at the top of the list because the whole story falls apart without him.
Yeah.
And you could say that about any character, though. And I don't know if butterfly boys just make it my top five.
Oh, really? If you were being poisoned and I fed you a butterfly to save your life, you wouldn't like me more? Really?
I know, but Kaz sneaks around. He gets in with the what the heck is his name? The traitor, whatever they call him. The guy who's an added-on feature to the show.
Oh, yeah.
Along with the sword.
And if everybody else dies of poisoning, then that becomes immaterial.
The butterflies, I don't know if that bumps him up in my book.
I wouldn't even put him on the list, honestly, Jeff.
You know what? Look at his face. Look at his face.
He looks like he should be 12.
The hair is...
The hair does throw me off.
He's going to be 100 and still have that adorable puppy face.
Well, when we're ranking them 100 years from now, he'll get that number one spot.
Put him at the top.
Yeah.
Great, I look forward to that.
Well, on that note...
that peaceful, loving note, thank you guys so much. This is so great.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
It's a long time coming. I really appreciate you guys' patience with us, with everything. But we love chatting with y'all.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Any chance we get together is a blessing. And listening to you guys get through this series and start this new podcast, especially since I was so late to Twilight, has been really fantastic. Aww. Because not just the fact that you guys are talking about the series, but the way that you approach it, the way you structure the show and the dynamic of your guys' friendship, it's a dream come true of a podcast for me. Aww. Like when that one refreshes on my podcatcher, I listen to it right away. I stop what I'm doing. That becomes the priority. I adore this show.
Thank you so much.
I haven't even been rereading the books with you guys because, I mean, I know them pretty well. But I've been listening to all the episodes, too. I'm like, this is a nice time.
Well, thank you, guys.
Yeah, and we appreciate that.
I've been off you guys for a while just because I've got all these other obligations, book clubs, and I'm mostly listening to audiobooks.
Yeah.
But I've been getting back into you guys lately, and I was genuinely, like, reminded. I'm like, dang, they're really good at this.
They're so
fun together.
Yeah.
To the point I'm like, I need to be more fun with Jess. I need to be singing more or something. But
Jeff and I just have wild energies, and two wild energies together makes a lot of wild energy in one space.
Yeah, but it's great energy. To it. It's great.
I mean, sometimes that's the key to a great podcast is you only have one Jess and only one Spencer, or you only have one Juliana and one Melanie, but then you put one Juliana and one Jeff on a show together and
and it's other chaos, but beautiful, lovely chaos.
Yeah, there's no anchor point.
Yeah.
It's like when Jim Carrey does the electric chair. I think you might have to turn it up. Is anybody out there?
It's like, I'm not sure what this has to do with the topic at hand, but I'm having fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to your last episode. I'm not going to be, you know, pushing too hard, but you did talk about maybe talking with people about Six of Crows, guests on your show, you know.
Yeah. Yes, we are going to be possibly bringing some people on, and don't you ever like tell yourself that you're not, because you are on our short list. So.
Thank you. And I'll
yeah,
say,
we definitely we're gonna
I means the world to me, because all I'll say to that is caw caw. I should have said that in a way that didn't sound like I was saying caw caw.
Yeah.
Caw caw
caw caw.
Oh, also, I don't know if you guys saw, but I have like a heavy metal Twilight
T-shirt. Yes.
I did see that. I love
did
that.
Did you see that they might be coming out with a Twilight show too? I was like, yes. Give it to me.
All right. Back to the other pod now.
You know what? We're just gonna keep churning this nostalgia factory.
Oh, yeah.
We're gonna do a show version of everything.
Yep.
Because we tried this thing for a while where we revive every old TV show as a new TV show.
Here we go.
And it's clearly not working. It didn't work for Punky Brewster. It didn't work for any of the Disney shows. It's not working for Night Court. So now we're just going to take every classic film series that was nostalgic for teenagers 20 years ago, and we're going to make it into a TV thing.
Harry Potter also.
I'm waiting for the Lizzie McGuire reboot at this point,
honestly.
That's
what the nation's holding its breath for. I'll tell you that right now.
That ending scene in the Lizzie McGuire movie, someone call me up. I would love to play Lizzie's double. I want to play Isabella.
Yes.
I want to play.
Sing for me, Paolo.
No, I smell a podcast.
Do yourselves a favor. Go listen to the episode of But Make It Scary where they turned the Lizzie McGuire movie into a horror movie.
I love that.
Go do that.
Or go listen to the one where I turned Camp Rock into a horror movie.
I will listen to that, actually.
Keep it going. Or the ones where I turned Jeff's music and lyrics or Breakfast at Tiffany's into horror
this
movies.
This sounds so fun. I need to bother
but
them
make
until
it scary
I get on.
With Sequoia Simone. Yes, brilliant concept by a brilliant host. That show is just, it's got a great backlog of episodes for you to get through, so go for it.
Yeah, Sequoia has a lot on that.
Speaking of great podcasts, everyone, please check out Into the Fold. If you've read Shadow and Bone.
The Grishaverse books.
Grishaverse books.
Shadow and Bone, We're doing the Crow Club.
The Crow Club.
Six of Crows. We just started Six of Crows, a.k.a. the Crow Club.
So if you guys have read those books, you're going to want to hear their podcast. And if you haven't read those books, you need to read those books and then go listen to the podcast because you guys are fantastic.
It's or you can just watch it. You can just listen and just be completely clueless and be surprised by what's
honestly
happening.
You'll have fun if you don't know it. I think the best compliment you can give to a review-based podcast is that you can enjoy it without knowing the thing they're talking about.
Yes.
But is there anything else you guys want to plug, talk about? Jeff, I know you have like an exciting show you've been trying to get going.
I do?
Yeah, the GoFundMe thing.
Actually, I have good news on that. So as one of my many ways of participating in fandoms is that I am a wizard rock musician. My band name is Dream Quaffle, and I have a couple of conventions lined up this year that I'm performing at. The first one is a very, very special convention that only happens every other year in Laconia, New Hampshire, called MystyCon. And unfortunately, even though I know they really wanted to, the convention organizers weren't able to offer me everything that they wanted to. So I set up a GoFundMe to try to offset some of the costs of traveling and performing at that convention. And I'm actually very happy to say that as of now, the GoFundMe that I set up has officially reached its goal.
Awesome. That's
Yay!
Great to hear. Yeah. I was really wanting you to do that. I'm a genuine fan of your music, truly.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. Check out, like you said, Dream Quaffle on what's it called? The music
Bandcamp.
Check them out there.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. And Juliana, you have another podcast, if not more.
Yeah. So if I'm always in the pipeline for more podcasts.
Tell me
about
it. Yeah.
But if you like Harry Potter, you can listen to Puffcast, which is your Harry Potter happy place. And I will also shamelessly plug that if you like donating to charity, I am running the New York City Marathon this fall. And if you'd like to donate to charity, all the money goes to Team for Kids, which is their premier charity that helps kids who are in underprivileged area get access to team sports and running events. And
that's awesome.
if you want to lift your day up, go to the Team for Kids website and just watch all the absolutely freaking adorable videos of these kids running.
That's
with
amazing.
With the biggest smiles on their faces.
Well, that's awesome. I'll link that in the show bio. And yeah, guys, check that out.
Yeah.
I recently ran a half marathon and nearly died. If you go on our Instagram, you can see the picture.
I would love to see pictures of this. Please send
it to me. It's the after picture of me. It's not my best. I'll send it to you guys. It's on my Instagram. But
That'd be great. Yes, please.
At the time. But but thank you guys once again so much. Please check out all their stuff. I'll have all their shows and whatnot linked in the bio. And hope we get to talk to you guys soon. Sooner than last time.
Yeah.
The turnaround hopefully sooner than last time. Because it's always a great time.
I agree. Absolutely. Thank you for having us on.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys.
Thanks.
Have a great night. Love y'all. And
love you guys too.
Bye.
Bye.
You guys have an out.
Oh, well, yeah.
Bye.
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 I didn't know if it was like have an unfortunate day.
No, that's way too clever. We just go bye.
When you make mistakes on the podcast ending, you are no longer cute.
That's great.
Right,
bye, y'all.
Bye.
That was great.